This is Take Care, a health and wellness show covering the latest in medicine, technology, human behavior, and more. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper.
Today we're exploring health information, your information, the information out there, and what you should be doing with it all. First, we ask, where do people get their health information?
Joining us to discuss this is Dr. Nilay Kumar. He teaches at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and the research we'll discuss today has a lot to do with the question of what people are looking for on the internet when it comes to health information. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Kumar.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for having me on your show.
So let's start out with, how has the ability of ordinary people to find health information changed over the years? Obviously, the internet has had a big effect. So how has that changed?
So I think about a couple of decades ago, when the internet was not available, most of the health information was obtained by patients from their primary care physicians, or by way of health campaigns that were run by professional organizations like the American Heart Association or other government agencies like the Centers for Disease Control. Of late, with the advent of the internet over the last decade or so, a lot of the patients are now finding all of their information on the internet. In fact, the Pew organization conducted a study where they found that approximately 80% of Americans look for their information online. And that raises certain challenges about the quality of information that patients are receiving.
Do you think overall, is the internet helping or hurting people as they try to get information about their own health and wellness?
So I think the democratization of information that has happened with the internet has a huge potential to empower patients with regards to their chronic illnesses and with regards to preventative care. One of the biggest challenges, though, is that misinformation has spread rapidly with the advent of the internet. So I think while we have huge opportunities to improve patients' care by empowering them and by helping them in self-management of chronic conditions, the biggest challenge is the spread of misinformation.
Are you seeing some dangers in patients trying to self-diagnose or, you know, doing an internet search just to find out answers to their basic questions rather than calling their doctor? I mean, what are the dangers there?
So I think one of the biggest dangers is that some of the diagnoses may not be as accurate. If we take a specific example of hypertension, it is quite straightforward to measure your own blood pressure using an automated blood pressure device. However, depending on the time of the day or depending on the technique of measurement, you can actually get a lot of variation in your own blood pressure measurements throughout the day. Therefore, it's important to be able to measure your blood pressure using the correct technique and using the recommended guidelines. So it's quite easy to come up with erroneous diagnoses based on some of the information that you find on the internet. It's always a good idea to make sure that you double check with your primary care provider and make sure that some of the concerns you have are actually legitimate concerns.
Is it often that patients request treatment based on their own research? Does that happen very often?
It does happen very often, because a lot of times from our own research, we have found that videos and websites that purport to sell alternative treatments, they get shared and liked a lot more often by patients, or by consumers, I should say, than videos and websites that actually have valid information. So a lot of people actually find alternative treatments online that they want to use, even though some of these treatments may not have been extensively validated in research studies.
Right. It's hard for the ordinary person to know the difference between a study that's been validated by the FDA and something that's just kind of out there.
Yeah, it's certainly the case, because many of the websites and videos that peddle treatments that have not been validated actually make sometimes very sensational claims, and those tend to be consumed by viewers a lot more than some of the more traditional sources of information, such as those from professional organizations or from universities.
Is there anything that could be done to help stop the spread of incorrect, wrong health information? We have freedom of speech in this country, so that may be hard, but is there anything that can be done to kind of stop that bad information from going viral?
You know, as we've seen in the last year or two, there's been a huge focus on fake news and on sensational claims going viral on social media and free messaging platforms like WhatsApp. So I think there has to be a balance between people being able to express their views versus those who are, engaging in conspiracy theories and spreading sensational claims about cures of chronic diseases that may not be validated. So I think the government and professional societies and universities can all play a huge role in helping patients navigate this terrain of misinformation versus the truth. Much of it will depend on what regulations are framed by the government in the coming years.
Some of your research shows increases or jumps in particular kind of health searches on the web at specific times during the year. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. We recently published a paper in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings where we looked at how healthcare information with respect to cardiovascular disease is obtained by users over the last 10 years. So we hypothesized that parallel to this increase in incidence and mortality, we would see an increase in web search activity during winter months. And we obtained data from Google in order to answer these questions. And we found that during winter months, people were looking at a lot more information with respect to cardiovascular disease problems like hypertension or myocardial infarction or heart failure compared with summer months. We also conducted an analysis where we looked at the correlation between the incidence of cardiovascular disease by state within the United States and how people in these states were looking at information with respect to cardiovascular disease on the internet. And we found that there was actually a positive correlation between the information that was being obtained from the internet versus the real world incidence of cardiovascular disease.
You know, 30 years ago, you wouldn't have thought anyone would get this much health information from the internet. Do you have any guesses as to where our health information is going to come from 30 years from now or in the future? How will it change?
I think we are going to see an increasing trend in the democratization of information. So the information asymmetry that used to exist between healthcare providers and patients is going to continue to decrease. And for the most part, that is a really good thing because that helps patients get empowered with respect to chronic disease conditions, and that helps patients take ownership of their own disease processes. So for the most part, I believe that the information age has brought about positive changes. But with the proliferation of smartphone and internet-based technologies, we definitely are going to come up against more challenges with respect to the spread of misinformation.
Well, I appreciate you pointing out the good and the bad about where we're getting our health information. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Kumar.
Thank you, Catherine.
Dr. Nilay Kumar is clinical assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. You can find more on the research we discussed today online.